Welcome to episode 32 of A Legitimate Salvage, your episode-by-episode guide to The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
I'm Katie Burt.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm Chip Sutterth.
And I'm Warren Fry.
And we're here to talk about the seventh episode of The Expanse Season 5, Oya Ding, which is Belter Creole for farewell. I think we established that last week.
Oh, well. I forgot it and put it in the show notes.
A lot
for
has
this
happened
week.
Since last week, Chip.
not to be a pedant, but is Creole the proper way to talk about it? Maybe it is. I have no idea.
I was wondering that too.
Well, that is what they call it in the language of the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good enough for me then.
Right. Yeah. No spoilers here. I think this is my favorite episode of the entire damn season thus far.
Wow. I thought you were going to go for a show, and I was like, I was ready for it. But
it's that last five.
It's what?
That's just the last 5 minutes that kind of seals the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about a payoff. It feels like a payoff for the last 5 minutes are a payoff for the episode, and this episode feels like a payoff for the whole damn season.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how hard it's been to watch Naomi like suffer and live through her worst nightmare. And so to really turn a corner on that feels good.
Yeah. And they don't shy away from the terribleness in this episode, but it still feels like
they give us something for our suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's like the bank of the expanse. You know, every week, we've had another deposit and then another deposit and then another deposit. And all of these deposits were pretty much Naomi angst.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we've been watching that all this time. And then the payoff. And it has been phenomenal. I'm going to barrel through the episode description and then let's break into the further discussion. So, if you have completely forgotten about what happened in episode 7 of season 5 in the last 5 days since it aired, we begin with a flashback already in progress, the happy family of Naomi, baby Philip, and Marco. Cut to Marco asking Philip, who's been doing some research on Naomi, if he has any plans for the ship she gave him. Philip says, hell no, and we suspect that Marco isn't offering to simply give Naomi a ride home. Marco then grants Naomi freedom aboard ship, but not before demonstrating his narcissism and manipulativeness. Quoth Naomi, the pain of losing Philip was not as horrible as having to stay with you. Burn. Meanwhile, Holden gets to do something! The Rossi is chasing the Zemea, trying to reclaim the protomolecule stolen from Tycho Station. Plot lines converge as Alex and Bobby on the Razorback, Avasarala at Earth, and Holden compare notes and discover just how much of a threat Marco's faction has become with Martian ships, and that Naomi's ship has been profiled among Marco's fleet. This gets Holden's attention. Naomi tries to connect with Philip, telling him of her insurgent OPA past and guilt, and her near suicide when she couldn't find him. His pain over her abandoning him is real. Next up, she meets Sin, and after another recap of her almost one-way trip out of an airlock, Sin confesses that he knew where Philip was all along. She's thunderstruck and challenges Sin to make it right. Marco sees doubt growing in both Sin and Philip and crushes it flat, refusing to let Naomi leave and negging Philip, telling him that he's nothing without Marco and will remain so until Marco is dead. Holden and the Rossi catch up to the Zemea, and our first proper gunship battle of the season ensues. The Rossi prevails, and Holden overrules Bull and Monica, intending to board the Zemea to find the lead on Naomi. The Zemea self-destructs. The point is moot. Marco has Naomi brought to the bridge and tells her she'll be free to go after her ship is used as bait to destroy the Rossi. She frantically appeals to Philip, who calls her a Welwala traitor and hits her. Sin also turns from her, but spies on her after she leaves and sees her heading toward an airlock. He rushes to join her, trying to convince her to not kill herself, and then he sees the syringe of oxygenated blood in her hand. It's not a suicide attempt. It's a leap of faith. Naomi jumps from the Pella, dosing herself halfway to her ship, making it inside just as the airlock repressurizes. What's up, danger? those Into the Spider-Verse drop-ins provided because I don't have any Babylon 5 references to make today. So.
Oh, I will. God. I will sorry. Accept those.
Was that out loud? I will as well.
Okay. Yeah. So I spilled forth that I think this is my favorite episode of the season. What do you all think?
I think you are correct. I didn't mind some of the Mars-based stuff before this. Mm. But that was more on the intrigue side of things. This is more on the action side of things. My one question is, why does he keep letting her go out of the cell? He doesn't have to, and it doesn't work. That's some bad leadership on your part, Marco.
That's a really good question, honestly.
Because it's more...
in his own vanity, because that's
it's
my
more,
guess.
Yeah, because it's more interesting plot-wise to ever be able to wander around and talk to all of the characters.
Yeah, and I think he likes to... I don't know. He likes to think of himself as, I don't know if benevolent is the right word, but I guess it's just like a show of like his power, what he can and can't do.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a messiah complex too. So there's that.
Total cult of personality, total. Mm-hmm. But not just orange blowhard in front of a crowd at the Capitol. But
well, whatever do you mean?
Yeah, but. Emotionally manipulative, just sort of getting in toxic masculinity and just emotional manipulation on the micro scale instead of the macro, you know. It's not he's not a propaganda dude, he's just this manipulative SOB.
He's a bad dad is what he is.
Yeah, I actually think that could be part of the reason he does let her wander around, because he is trying to maybe manipulate Philip and Sin on some level to just be like, how far are you going to like buy her or listen to Naomi? And he's just spying. Yeah. I assume he's just spying on them all the time based on what we've seen.
Which is particularly hard to do with such a open concept bridge there.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, like... She has that one convenient little alcove where she's sitting down and then they can't, I think it's Sin, can't see what she's doing. Mm-hmm. But then she leaves it up anyway. Yeah. Or no, it's Philip that does it. It's Philip. That's But either way, that you're right. The open concept thing doesn't really help.
Yeah.
Yeah. This episode is so much about the relationships between Marco, Philip, Sin, and Naomi. And it spends an awful lot of time with that and an awful lot of talking. I was struck by, you know, the screenwriting 101, you know, show, don't tell. There is a huge amount of telling happening in this episode. And in the end, I think it kind of works. But I'm curious about, we all really like this episode. But it's spending an awful lot of time with people having kitchen table conversations with each other.
Yeah, I mean...
And when you think about it, it doesn't really... I mean, I guess Naomi's revelation pushes it forward, but everybody else is kind of being the same. You know what I mean? But I guess it raises the stakes is the best way to put it.
Yeah, and I do think there is, like, the moment when Marco comes to Naomi's cell... And at the beginning of the episode, and he's kind of like, this is the first time I've actually been alone. Like, they've always had these conversations on the bridge or in the mess hall. And so they are kind of rehashing in some ways. Like, they're telling each other a lot about, you know, she's basically like, you were a manipulative bastard. And, you know, he's...
Story checks out.
Yeah, but they actually haven't had that conversation. So I think it kind of works, even though it is kind of recapping in some ways, like, oh, we already know this, but to see them actually have that conversation.
Also, this is a TV show and it's on a streaming service, but the whole principle of I might have just started watching this still kind of falls in there.
Yeah. Also, sometimes people have conversations like that, you know, I think show don't tell is good general advice, but like all like vague broad rules, there's definitely some nuance there. I also think it, you know, this is a family, for want of a better word, that obviously has a lot of political influence and power in this world in various ways. So getting to see how, like, the personal life bleeds into the political and how the political bleeds into the personal is, which is always the case with, you know, in every family. But for this family, it's just like everything is so much, the stakes are so much higher in all those cases is, is effective. And I think The Expanse has always really invested in showing how the political is personal on the very human level. So this in that way is not, especially for the Belters. So this in that way is not out of character for the show.
And also they sort of showed how Philip, it finally sinks in what he's been a party to. Like, and it's an abstract concept in the first place. If you've killed millions of people, you can't actually conceive of that. Right. Even though we saw the asteroids land. But to him, it's just, well, I hit a button and that's what I guess happened, you know, but it's not real until she sort of, it sinks in finally.
Well, he's never been to Earth too. So,
yeah.
So it sinks in and yet he rejects it, you know, fast forward to the end of the episode and he slaps Naomi in the face.
Yeah.
And, that was again, all these deposits of all these conversations, and you feel like, you know, he's crying in her arms at one point. So you feel like there is a chance that she's going to reach him, but Marco is trying to reach him as well. And it seems like he gets the last word and Philip responds to that. And then in the end, unless Philip is playing a long game,
I don't know if Philip has it in him to play a long game.
No.
But, He's a kid. He's a kid.
But I can see him turning in episode 10 impulsively and taking her side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
think it does come down to the fact that, like, as much as I think he maybe is finally seeing that there's a different side, and I think, like, you know, when you see them together and he's crying, like, the fact that she says, like, oh, I didn't just leave you. Like, this, what your dad told you wasn't true.
So I feel like she should have opened with, but maybe he wouldn't have been able to hear it.
But, I mean, at the same time, he's still 16, and he's still, like, this is the family he's known his entire life. So,
I think if he had helped her, it would have felt maybe unearned.
Yeah.
It definitely at this point, for sure. But it is a harsh moment. The Philip's arc in this episode is tough to watch. He's being manipulated by Marco. Naomi's trying to reach him. He comes back to Marco and he tells Naomi that he's his own man. He doesn't need Marco. He doesn't need her. You know, I am my own man. And he presents that way to Marco, says, I want my own ship. I want to start making a name for it. And Marco says, you're not ready for this. You have failed so many times. But someday, everybody will be calling your, praising your name, but not until I'm done. And then everybody on the bridge does the Greek chorus thing and chants his name. Philip has no chance.
No.
But also, nothing he said is wrong. Like, it's manipulative and terrible, and he's using it poorly. But is he incorrect about any of that? The kid shouldn't have his own ship, probably.
No, absolutely not. I did think, you know, oh, I guess the future of the belt is, you know, you inherit power. Is that...
So we're back to medievalism. Yeah. That's great.
I guess that's Marco's grand plan. Or...
Yeah, nobody said anything about parliamentary politics since Fred Johnson got killed.
So what you're saying is that Canada is no more in the 20-whatever century.
Sorry, Warren.
Well, we had to come. We just probably just gave up. It's our way out.
But what I really love about the lead up to those final 5 minutes is that this is the first time we've been told about Naomi being on the brink of suicide after losing Philip. We get the airlock story. Then we get the airlock story again. And it's just sort of out of the blue, and the repetition feels like it's a little too much and a little too almost hokey to be suddenly dumped on it and then repeated so many times. And then in the end, it's enough to make me completely blank out on the possibility that she's actually making a last ditch effort to save the Rossi, that she's jumping to something instead of away from something.
Well, I was going to say, I think in so many points during the season, I've just been like, oh, maybe Drummer will save her. Maybe like so-and-so will save her. But that has always, I would have been okay with those outcomes, but it is also cool that Naomi actually figures out a way to save herself. Pretty extreme way.
We'll see how that works out.
Yeah, like, what's she going to do when she gets in that ship? Like, I'm glad she got there, but now what? Is she going to use it as a bomb and threaten the other ship?
Yeah.
She takes off, they're going to shoot her, right? Yeah. So, also, she's passed out. It's like, she's got oxygenated blood, but she's not going to just get back up again.
Yeah, I mean, I assume when she slammed into the door, too, that that probably broke something, like...
I was like, Astro Mechanics and 2001 have been lying to me this whole time. Because 2001, it's 2 seconds and he's done for. He barely gets through the airlock. And this, she's like, but that's weird because Sin dies almost instantly and she doesn't, even though she waits to the last minute to plunge the thing into her leg.
Mm-hmm.
Or her side, I think.
Yeah.
Although we see Ashford get to like get through at least a verse.
That's true, yes.
Yeah. I did say... James S.A. Corey on Twitter talking about the like science of how they decided they could believably think that was possible. And part of it was maybe belters having more like their lung capacity being slightly different than someone from
That's
Earth.
Fair.
And then also they were just like, and the oxygenated blood. So, and she's our hero.
It's
why not?
Yeah, it's a cool scene. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day, as long as she's not, yodeling on the way over or something.
Yeah.
Oh God.
I am surprised.
I can just imagine that.
I am surprised how much the show got me to care about Sin. Maybe I'm alone in this, but I thought he was a really interesting character. And I think I didn't believe that Philip would help Naomi, but I thought there was a chance that Sin would. And I think There's such a tragedy in that he doesn't and can't.
And then just dies.
Yeah, and dies. He dies. Yeah, it is also like, maybe he would have died if he tried to help Naomi anyway, but...
Well, it's kind of like, yeah, I really got invested in his character, but in the end I was pretty much like, he's kind of a coward for whatever reason. Like, you know, at this point it's like, he really makes that choice not to help her. And, if he truly regrets, like, what he knew what it was all those years ago. As much as he says, oh, I thought you'd come back. He made that decision to, like, hide Philip from her, knowing who Marco was. And then he does have the chance to make, and I get it. He probably would die, right? Like, I'm not saying it would be an easy choice, but...
But he also, the difference between him and Philip is confused about what is right and what's wrong. If Sin isn't confused, you're right. He just is afraid to follow, his moral code, I guess, or his,
I mean, he knows Marco, and that's not just a, if I cross him, I'm going to get spaced kind of thing. But it's also Marco is family. If anything, even though Sin helped raise Philip and Sin felt guilty about doing Naomi wrong and wished that they could all be back together as part of a happy family, in the end, Marco is the hub and everybody around Marco is just a spoke. And Sin is dependent on Marco, like emotionally as well as... for three squares and a bunk to sleep in, he's dependent on Marco for his sense of identity and family and everything. And that's what Marco does. That's what
Naomi said that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So where does Marco stand in the cavalcade of villains that the Expanse has had over the last five seasons?
I'd say he's up there. I still like Julie. Was it Julie Mao? Is it, which one's the dad?
Oh,
Jules Pierre Mao.
Jules Pierre Mao. Thank you. I like him probably best.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah. There's just so many good villains on the show.
Yeah,
I think Murtry kind of falls to the bottom for me. Even though,
yeah,
which is unbelievable because I love Bern Gorman,
and he's good. He's just he's got a lot of competition.
Yeah, and I think he also just maybe had less nuance or something I'd seen before.
Yeah,
but he did. It wasn't that he did a bad job. It's just there's great villains on this show.
Also, the guy who was doing Bobby wrong on Mars, I can't remember his name. The cop, he was pretty great too.
Yeah.
I have a question about the scene of young Naomi in air quotes and young Marco in air quotes. Was that wasn't probably, they don't have de-aging money, but that was a miracle of makeup and lighting because they did look younger.
They did.
Like, and they're both attractive, youngish looking people to begin with, even though they're probably both in their 40s. But they looked like they were in their 20s or enough to fool me anyway.
Yeah, they did a great job with that.
I believe I believe Dominique Tipper's in her 30s actually, so she's showing some range, and with Josiah Chase Owens in his 20s, and they're plausibly playing mother and father, even though the actual age gap isn't that great.
Yeah, she's 32. They're really they're really making they're going bold with that. To be honest.
I mean, and I would just assume people like the old teenagers on 90210 rule, everybody's 29. You know what I mean? So
no, I
just assume everybody who's playing X number is probably that much older.
It throws everything off.
Yeah. It's true.
So can we have a moment of appreciation for Dominique Tipper?
Yeah.
And
what
she does in this episode.
It's incredible.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, it's incredible. It's amazing. Let's draw it out a little bit for the benefit of our listeners.
Oh,
that's pretty cool. That's my favorite.
She has been playing the wronged woman, the captive woman, the tragic heroine throughout all this stuff, and she hasn't had the opportunity to really take agency this season until now. And the range that she puts into Naomi in this episode, from rage to fear to guilt to determination, it's the complete package.
Well, this is basically her season, just like last one was Holden's, essentially, right?
Yeah, she has to, especially in the scene with Philip, she really has to deliver the pretty harsh truths to him in some ways. Like, she's telling him so much about her own vulnerability, her like most vulnerable moment, right? But she's also still able to convey like the deep disappointment she has about the life choices that he made. The way she delivers the line about, I had all these dreams for who you were going to be, and now my dream is like that someday like will regret the choices you have made. I feel like that is a really hard line to sell. It's a beautiful line, but it is.
Yeah.
You believe, but I totally believe her, and that she has this motherly love that also means that she has deep disappointment. Yeah, she's great. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. I'm also excited for, after seeing so much of the season be about her being so vulnerable and such a dark place, that I'm hoping she's going to get to do some really badass things coming up. Not
she
that the jump
that
wasn't
Marco.
That, but...
Do we have a Marco death pool, by the way?
Because
somebody's going to kill him.
Cool. Definitely.
The book readers are laughing at us even
yeah,
as
they are.
What's that? What's that sound in the distance?
cue the gif of the guy laughing about the Red Wedding, that thing from Survivor. That's
right,
like
three
memes deep.
We said that last season was Holden's story. This one's kind of Naomi's story, but Holden actually gets to take front and center for at least a portion of this episode. And I was not sure how I didn't know how much I missed Rossi gunship battles. until we finally got one this time around. And I love the physics of the Expanse, and I love everything about that. The one thing that was weird was Holden's the only one of our characters on the Rossi right now. Everybody else is a minor character who has been around this season or previously, but and the stakes always felt higher for me having Amos and Alex and Naomi on the ship alongside. So what is it like to have Holden just the guy, just the one guy leading this action sequence for us?
It is not the same, basically. I was going to say, Cass Anvar's personal predilections aside, I love the back and forth between Alex and Holden, you know, and all the faux cowboy nonsense he'd throw out as they were being chased by whoever and letting bullets spray everywhere. So I kind of missed that part of it.
I think that...
I mean, this crew's okay, but...
Yeah, I think, like, everyone in the Rossi is, like, team, family, is better together. And, like, we saw Amos, you know, just talking about how he needs to get back so that they, you know, he has these people who help... who act as his like moral compass in some way. But I think the same is true for everyone, including Holden. And I think seeing Holden on the Rossi without the people he trusts and cares about and who know him so well to like kind of also, you know, steer him a little bit, or like, I don't know, they all just balance each other out so well. So when they're on their own, it's like, you really get just like pure Holden, pure Amos, pure whatever. And, yeah, in this case, Holden just, like, making some unilateral decisions and maybe also just... He's also struggling, you can tell. And a struggling Holden is not the same thing as a struggling Amos. It's not as volatile, but I do worry.
Yeah.
He's made some pretty big decisions in the past when he's been struggling.
I do think, too, you know, we're talking about the showing, not telling. And I do think there's a point where he's talking to Monica about, like, where the proto-molecule came from. And, like, you know, oh, Naomi gave it to Fred John. And it just feels like a plot recap in a way that I mean, I guess that she needs to know this information. Like, she is trying to figure out, like, what is going on with Holden, what's going on with the Rossi, what's going on with the larger political scene, but it felt very plot dumpy to me to be like, just remember, guys. And I think sometimes...
And also, she's a reporter. She probably knows more about this than most people do.
Yeah. I think sometimes I don't totally buy her character as, like, much more than...
I'm surprised to see her on the crew, because the last time she was on there, she was betraying them, right?
Yeah. Shoved out of an airlock in her own way. She's growing on me a little bit.
Yeah, same here.
But in part, that's because she and Bull are pretty much drop-in replacements for our crew. And they have to play that kind of a role with Holden, and it kind of sort of works, you know. But nothing against Jose Zuniga, but when he says, here comes the juice, it's not the same as when Cass Anvar says it.
It isn't.
So Holden's being our hero, and he's on the bridge of the Rossi, and he's doing Holden things, but he doesn't have the people around him reacting to him who know him. And that's I think that is a negative to this. But on the other hand, we're finally getting Holden having agency. We're finally having the Rossi in a shooting fight. It adds so much to this episode, having this sequence.
I just love those space battles. They're spinning, and it's just...
I'm not sure how feasible all that is, but it's still cool.
Exactly.
Now, you did mention exposition dump with Holden and Monica. We also had the exposition dump between Holden and Bull talking about Fred Johnson. Who was killed like 2-3 episodes ago. Time has no meaning anymore. But that wasn't that was another one of those long, as you know, Bob, kind of conversations.
Yeah, but it was more for flavor, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't really an exposition dump. It was more of like a theme or like character dump, which I think is like less common, but also when not done artfully, just as annoying. Mm. And like The Expanse doesn't really do this sort of thing that much. So it doesn't really, and also, I mean, I just watch a lot of shows that do this a lot more. but yeah, that was a little clunky, I thought.
I agree, but it sort of, and I guess this is sort of, again, I love this episode. I think it's my favorite of the season. And I'm trying to figure out if it is that despite all of the time that is spent on relational communication in this episode, or because of it. Mm-hmm. And I can't make up my mind. Was the rest of it was the payoff so good that the rest of it just sort of built toward it? Or the conversation between Naomi and Philip, the conversation between Naomi and Marco, the conversation between Naomi and Sin, the conversation between Holden and Bull, all of this stuff. We're getting to know these characters, and those conversations make the characters more real for us. But so what do you think? It's a great episode despite all of that, or because of all of that?
I guess slightly towards because, because it's all character buildup, right? Like, we're getting to know these people better. Like, this whole thing was Holden and Bull, I just felt like it was the closest thing I've ever gotten yet to bro-ing it up. So I was like, oh, this is fun to watch.
Yeah, this is a hard question for me to answer, because that's like my favorite part of all TV shows. The like relationship stuff.
You're still holding out for a side series, The Expanse Coffee Shop,
exactly.
Right?
Coffee Shop AU.
I mean, if Holden ever like retires, I mean, feels like he should open a coffee shop, right?
Yeah, and there'll be like social justice, like activist meetings there.
Yeah. probably not where the show's going, though.
No. I was going to say, this doesn't sound very Expansy at all.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of time. There's going to be a lot of time for opening coffee shops in the near future.
Although, honestly, the biggest social justice warrior here is Marco, when you think about it. Yeah. So
he's definitely had a lot of meetings.
I don't know. He seems like the not meeting type. He seems like
He has meetings and then he just talks the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, there he goes. I'm sure that's a phenomenon in social justice circles sometimes too. Some raging egomaniac talking as I am right now. So who am I to say?
I've never been in a meeting like that. Never.
No, me
no,
neither.
None of us. Oh, any final thoughts about this? We're 3 weeks away from the end of series 5. We have just found out that unless something happens down the road, the next series, season 6, is going to be the last one for The Expanse. And that's 6 quality years worth of television, but there's obviously room for more if they can find a way. But any final thoughts about Oyedeng?
Well, I noticed you said in the notes, Bobby casually picking bullets out of her suit. I'm like, that was pretty great.
Yeah. I know.
I'm always on Team Bobby.
I know,
every day.
She's amazing.
I'm hoping she gets off of the Razorback sometime soon.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of time on that cramped set. We did briefly see Bobby and Christian being Christian. And Alex being Alex, but you know, this is really Naomi's story, with a good seasoning, additional seasoning of Holden there. It's a good match. Katie and Jen, any other final thoughts about this one?
Nope. I'm just excited to see what happens next.
I know. I really was like, okay, now I can watch. And then I was like, I don't have the next one. Every episode.
I actually like that. I like that they're doing that, because I felt like I had to cram everything in the last time.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I much prefer week by week, even when I'm just, I like having time to digest it.
Like I just watched both episodes of WandaVision, and now I'm like, I want to see what happens next. I want to see how they handle the 70s. What's going on?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we are forced to wait. So please follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter and find us on the Incomparable Network. And we will be back next week to discuss Season 5, Episode 8, Hard Vacuum. Thank you for joining us on A Legitimate Salvage. Until next time.
Walking away is the only choice anyone ever has.